Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Beyond the Dais, a podcast about the stories taking place in and around El Paso County, Colorado. I'm your host, Scott Anderson, and today I am joined by Lieutenant Shannon Snuggs of the Colorado Springs Police Department. How are you doing today, Lieutenant?
I'm well, Scott. Thanks for letting me be here.
No, thank you for having me over here. I really appreciate it. Before we get started, though, I want to quickly add that if listeners are interested in more stories about people doing good in and around El Paso County, or hearing from county leadership about local government priorities and how they operate, you can find additional episodes of this podcast on your podcast platform of choice. But to get started today, Lieutenant, I was wondering if you could share a bit of background about yourself and how you found your way here to the Colorado Springs Police Department.
I've been with the Colorado Springs Police Department for 20 years. I'm currently the lieutenant over the special victims section, and I have had the best time serving our community. I'm very lucky to work for the Colorado Springs Police Department. In my current role, I think has been probably one of my most favorite because it's an opportunity to be able to speak up for those victims that can't speak for themselves, like the children, our domestic violence victims, the ones that are just so brave to come forward and tell their stories. And so I just think it's great that you're taking the time to come and learn more about what all we do. And I appreciate that.
Awesome. No, it's definitely my pleasure. I really appreciate it. And one of the things we're going to get to a little bit later in this conversation is the discussion around National Child Abuse Prevention Month. It is April, and that's something we've been highlighting here in the podcast. But we'll get to that a little bit later. First, though, it'd be great if you can talk about the special victims section itself and how it fits within the department's organizational structure.
Sure. So the special victims section is one of three sections that's part of the investigations division. The other two are the violent crime section and then the technical investigations section. The special victims section encompasses three different teams. So we have the domestic violence adult sex assault unit, which has 10 detectives, four civilian criminal investigators, and two supervisors. And then over at our Safe Passage location is where our Crimes Against Children unit is housed, and they have 10 detectives, one civilian criminal investigator, and two supervisors. Also in Safe Passage is our forensic interviewing team, so that's specially trained interviewers to talk to children and people with developmental delays. There's three forensic interviewers, and then one supervisor over that team. And then we also have a Crimes Against At-Risk Adults unit. So think of your grandma, grandpa over 70 years old, or maybe they have some special needs circumstances that classify them as at risk. And we have two detectives there, a civilian criminal investigator, and then the supervisor is shared between the Crimes Against Children unit and our at-risk unit.
Forgive my being uninformed, I guess, about the matter. But when you are a member of a section and you have these different units within the section, is that something where the members of these units rotate through and, deal with each of these specific teams, or do they sort of specialize in one of those areas?
They tend to specialize in one of those areas. So all of our detectives have tested and chosen to be part of these teams and be these voices for all of these victims. And so like our domestic violence adult sex assault team, they specialize in speaking with those victims and working through those crimes. Our Crimes Against Children side specialize in that. And the entire section comes looking at all of their investigations from a victim-centered, trauma-informed approach, making sure that the decisions we're making, the investigative steps that we're taking, are what's best for those victims to start to heal and to move forward from the trauma they've experienced.
Yeah, and one of the things that I think is really interesting to learn about and to talk about is, of course, not just the victims who experience that trauma and, your teams being the ones to help them through that, but your team itself being in these situations where they're seeing these traumatic things happen to these at-risk individuals, whether it's youth or any part of the spectrum. How is your team able to, I guess, one, handle that, but two, sort of keep going and be the ones who can be relied on to I guess, help those victims through those situations?
And that's a great question, Scott, and great perspective to understand what they're seeing and what they're going through and, you know, the vicarious trauma that they hear about, the secondary trauma they're exposed to, and seeing these scenes, experiencing these horrific things, you know, as they go through their investigations. And first, I think a lot of it comes down to the detectives themselves are just that dedicated to making sure that they are doing the best they can for these victims and speaking out for those victims who are so brave to come forward and tell their stories. But additionally, our department's very focused on wellness and resiliency. And so we're making sure that they have access to all the resources that they need to help process all of that trauma that they're experiencing and seeing, and give them an outlet to go forward and ask for help when they need it. Maybe it's just a conversation that they need to work through what they saw so that they can come back tomorrow. But just making sure that our people are okay and making sure they know they have resources that can help them through whatever they're experiencing so that they can be the best detective they can be in speaking for these victims.
Yeah. And I think, you know, having that sort of culture within an organization, it starts at the top. Right. And if you don't have a leader who wants that type of culture to be a part of the organization, then it's probably not going to be there. And so I wanted to ask about the Colorado Springs Police Chief, Chief Adrian Vasquez. He abides by four specific principles, and I aped this from the website, so this isn't just something I knew. So those four things are responsive, excellence, humility, and honor. So how do those principles resonate with you in the work that you and your team do here in the Special Victims Unit?
I think for us, looking at it, you would have to say that honor is the most important of all of those, because with honor, you're going to be providing those excellent police services, that we are approaching our community with a sense of procedural justice, that we're transparent in what we're doing. We are giving the community a voice, we give our victims a voice, we give our suspects a voice so that they can tell us their side of things. We're unbiased in what we're doing. We come at it as fact finders and looking to find what happened, what resources can we provide to help them move forward in all of this. Also, as part of being that responsiveness of going back to that transparency, that we're telling people what we're doing and why we're doing it, keeping them up to date on how this investigation's going, what the next investigative steps. We have a great partnership with the district attorney's office and the victim advocacy unit there. And then we have our own victim advocacy unit here at the PD. In addition, Safe Passage has their own victim advocates. And so really all working together so that it's a seamless transition as people go through the criminal justice system and working together to kind of let them know, hey, here's the next steps. Here's what you can expect to happen kind of next in the evolution of what that court case looks like. In that humility component of things, of acknowledging that we can always improve, we can always do things better the next time, and looking for ways to make sure that we are providing those best services, looking for partners in the community that we can work with, like the forensic nursing program at the at UC Health. And so, you know, we talk about Safe Passage. That's one of the partners that you're going to see over there. And so looking how we can all work together, it sounds kind of like a corny Colorado Springs Utilities thing, but it's how we're all connected because we're all here serving the community and trying to provide the best services for our community in these horrible events and try to help people start to heal and try to move forward from where they're at.
Mm-hmm. I think one of the things that is a misconception is how the police department works with suspects. One of the great things that I think you mentioned is that you give everyone a voice, including the suspects, because you really are like a fact-finding organization. You're not about, here's the person and move them on to the next step, right? It's about finding the truth. I wanted to sort of highlight that because I think there is that a big misconception of, you know, a suspect is always a suspect, and they're looked at a certain way when they become a suspect. And, you know, they're not looked at as a person, they're looked at as someone who obviously did something wrong, right? I've just started watching district court streams. Like, just to educate myself, right? Because I guess fortunately, haven't really been close to the legal process much in my life, right? And, you know, you watch TV and you get a perception of what it is, and it's very much not that, right? I mean, in some ways, but most of the time, it's very much not that. And just, I was impressed, and maybe it's an indictment on me and maybe the general public that I was impressed, but with how the magistrate dealt with the defendants. And I mean, she was just treating them like you would want anyone to be treated. You know, it didn't matter that you were a defendant. She was saying, hey, here are some, like, if you need resources, you can look here and here. We have things provided for you here. If you need, you know, assistance, if you need accommodations, like whatever you need, we're here in a place to try and like best help you as much as we're able, right? It wasn't, you know, someone who has been accused of something, a suspect in, you know, coming in front of a judge and like already being on the back foot of, you know, this is a losing cause if I'm a defendant because like it's clearly against me. How I was seeing it was, this is actually like a very level playing field, it seems. Like they are given the benefit of the doubt, just like the prosecution is given a benefit of the doubt in some respect. So I really like the conversation around, hey, everyone is just a person. They're not, like, just because they're labeled as a suspect or a victim or a defendant or whatever, we're not treating them any different. We're just trying to find fact. I don't know if that was too proselytizing there, but I just think it's an interesting conversation, but I wanted to get your feedback on that.
Sure. And I think if you would go to our training academy and watch what the conversations are there, mm-hmm. or attend some of the lineups that are happening in our patrol divisions, you're going to hear a very similar sentiment to what you're saying.
Okay.
That everybody should be treated like a human being.
Right.
People shouldn't be judged by their worst day. Mm-hmm. And so are there sometimes some officer safety considerations that we have to be assertive in? I need you to do this right now. And now is not the time for me to have a conversation, explain to you why we're here. Mm-hmm. But when it's safe to do so, that we have those conversations and explain, here's why I'm here. Here's what's going on. I want to hear your side of information. And obviously, you know, some legal processes that go along with when that can happen, how that can happen. And so making sure that we're upholding the constitutional rights of everyone. Mm-hmm. And that's very important to our department, is making sure that the constitutional rights of all people are upheld. And like you said, it doesn't matter the label I have to put on a case report that identifies this is the victim, this is the suspect. Everybody should be treated with fairness, dignity, and respect throughout that process, treated like a human being and given the opportunity to explain their side of things and get the opportunity to know transparently what is happening, why am I here?
And I think that just goes to, like you had alluded to, it goes to those principles that Chief Vasquez, you know, talks about, and honor to me is really what that is all about. And being someone who is honorable is someone who does what is right, right? And, you know, regardless of whether it's popular or, you know, seen as correct or whatever the case is, you do what you think is right. I think it's a really interesting conversation and one that is important to have when, you know, I don't think people have a opportunity very often to speak with someone who is on the police force. And, you know, that's not a conversation that happens every day. And so being able to take advantage of that when you're able to talk to one, I think is an important thing to do. So I want to move on. You've talked about Safe Passage a couple of times. I talked to you about Safe Passage before we started. A really, really cool organization. And again, mentioned how April is the National Child Abuse Prevention Month. I went over to Safe Passage and I spoke with them earlier this month about the work that they do. I'm wondering if you can give a little bit more in-depth discussion about your team's involvement with Safe Passage and why that is such an important partnership.
Well, first we have to acknowledge that Safe Passage is celebrating their 30th year anniversary.
Year, that's right.
So congratulations, Safe Passage. We have been working with Safe Passage for my entire career. And so 2 years ago, they came together and came up with a co-located facility, the only co-located facility in the state of Colorado. So it's Child Advocacy Center, probably what most people refer to it as, but it's the only co-located child advocacy center in the state of Colorado. And nationally, only about 20% of child advocacy centers follow this co-located model. So 2 years ago, Mo did this amazing thing and got us all together and brought all the stakeholders together and talked about and educated us all about how important it is for these families to have one-stop shopping. And so when you go to Safe Passage, you're met with a kid-friendly environment because that's what it's geared towards, is the kids. And kids don't, you know, a police station's a little harsh at times. And Safe Passage is built to not be that, to be that kid-friendly place. So you walk in and a kid feels like, okay, this is a safe place. And inside that facility, you have advocates to help with where the family's struggling. Are there financial needs that they're struggling with? Can there be housing help or food help? And so they have all these resources to try to help these families. But that's not where they stop. Then they come together and they have the family center there. So now we have some counseling and some mental health resources. Again, all this one-stop shopping. UC Health has some forensic nurses located there so that they can see the children there. The Colorado Springs Police Department's in there. El Paso County Sheriff's Office is in there. So we're trying to cover as much of the judicial jurisdiction as we possibly can. The district attorney's office is over there having conversations with everybody. Kid Power is in there. So after the fact, or even if it's not because your family has been a victim of something that required you to be there, but you want to, you know, teach your kids and empower your kids with body safety and things that, you know, sometimes parents are a little hesitant to talk about. It's a place where they know how to have those conversations. They know how to broach those topics. And so that co-located facility makes a world of difference for these families, where before they would come over here to the police department and start there and then go over to Safe Passage because that's where we wanted to do a kid-friendly interview. And then maybe we needed to go to the hospital because we needed to do medical treatment. And so just think of how much time that takes out of somebody's day, how much time that person's not at work, that they're not able to get a paycheck to make ends meet, which only makes the situation worse. Yeah. So this co-located facility really makes a difference in the lives of everyone. Family friendly, comfortable for the kids, focused on the kids, and one-stop shopping so that they can take care of everything in one step.
Yeah, and just the way that it's described. And so you were, Safe Passage has been around, but this strategy had not been around your entire career. Can you talk about the difference, like the before and after, essentially, of, you know, once this co-location strategy started? Because as you were discussing, you know, a victim might have to first start off at a police station and then go maybe to Safe Passage and then maybe go to a hospital and then maybe go to the DA's office. And then, you know, and there are just all these stops along the way just so that they can have their voice heard, essentially. Again, in your experience from like the before and after, how has this changed the victim experience having this sort of strategy in place?
I think a lot of the victims look at it and come away feeling heard. It is so brave for these young victims to come forward and tell their story. And so to have this whole entity wrap their arms around these victims and help them, that it's the comfort of a comfortable facility, a place where it's not sterile and overwhelming.
Yeah.
And just giving them this opportunity to feel like, you know what, they've got me from start to finish of this experience. They've got me, and they've surrounded me with the tools and the resources so that I can help my family through this, that I can help my child survive through this, and just this holistic approach to everything. And I think the victims come away feeling like it's a much more positive, seamless process instead of feeling like everybody's kind of on an island and disjointed.
Yeah. And one of the things that you had talked about a little bit earlier were those forensic interviews. And I'm sure your team is heavily involved in that part of the process. When the fact exists that now there only has to be that one interview done that can be used for legal purposes throughout, like if there's a trial involved or whatever the case may be, instead of the victim having to retell their story multiple times. I'd like you to talk about that and the importance of that, because to me, when I was speaking with Safe Passage, that was the thing that really like hit me the hardest was this makes so much sense. And this seems like the right way to do a thing that, of course, nobody wants to have to do. But when you do have to do it, it seems like the right way to do it.
Absolutely. And so, you know, years of, unfortunately, things like this, trauma's been happening. And so looking around and saying, okay, how can we do this better? How can we make it less traumatic, a reoccurring, having to retell over and over, because these kids are so brave for coming forward and telling their story, and to have to say it again and again, and every time they're telling their story, they're having to relive it. And so what's better that they only have to tell once and we can all be part of that conversation on the front end, or to have to subject a kid to telling the cops and then telling the nurse and then telling mom and dad and. And so it really is a huge improvement for the kids to just this one stop, one time, and then we can get them into getting the help that they need, getting them in with those therapists and other providers to help them process what they've been through, to help them heal and move on.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Thank you for sharing that. So, you know, we've talked about the connection with Safe Passage, but again, as it relates to National Child Abuse Prevention Month, why is that such an important thing to highlight for your team specifically?
Well, we're about to enter the summer months where kids aren't in school, and so the opportunities for mandatory reporters or for kids to be around if the child is being abused or in an unsafe situations, a lot of times school or church or one of those places where they have those trusted adults where they can feel safe enough to come forward and say, hey, this is happening in my life. Those kind of decline a little bit in the summer. And so I think it's a great opportunity as we're going into those months to help people start thinking about, okay, what does this look like? Am I seeing an abused child? Am I seeing a neglected child? And if so, what can I do about it? And there's a lot of things you can do. You can call the police department and let us start an investigation. You can go to websites, co4kids.org, and take a look at the signs of what some child common signs of child abuse are. There's a way to report anonymously on those places. And so I think as we kind of go into those summer months where we're going to be having kids out and enjoying their summer vacation, it's an opportunity to bring the conversation to the forefront, because one out of every seven kids is going to be a victim of child abuse in a lifetime. And so we need to have that conversation out there. We need to start making it okay for the kids to come forward and be so brave and tell what's happening, and for adults to be on the lookout and say, man, something's just not right here, and be brave enough themselves to say, I'm going to do something about it. I'm going to make a phone call. I'm going to send an email.
So I think that we've been able to cover a lot of ground here, which has been really great. I really appreciate the conversation. But I did want to give you an opportunity to add anything else that you think would be important for listeners to know about.
Thanks, Scott. If you don't mind, I just want to throw out some of the things to look for when it comes to child abuse. So, you know, are there strange bruises or welts or burns on a child? Bruises on kids aren't uncommon. I'm not saying every bruise is child abuse, but look for ones that are in strange places that don't make sense. A bruise on the shin, that's pretty normal. Mm-hmm. A bruise on their rear end is probably a little more strange. Does the bruise have a distinctive shape to it that makes you go, man, that really looks like a coat hanger or something that just doesn't make sense that a kid would get bruised with? Mm-hmm. Those are the things you're kind of looking for. Does the kid have a sudden change of behavior? Did they go from being a really kind of nice kid to being really mad all the time? And so if you're seeing these big behavior changes in the kid, that's something to be worried about. Are they missing school a whole bunch? Another sign, maybe there's something going on. And, you know, think about what's age appropriate for a kid to be by themselves. If a two-year-old's home alone, that's a problem. And so if you see anything, please don't hesitate to report. There's a couple of different ways you can do that. You can call the Colorado Springs Police Department at 719-444-7000. There is a 1-844-CO4KIDS or 844-264-5437. And that's where you can report anonymously. And then don't forget that website, co4kids.org. That'll kind of walk you through some of those signs I was talking about and give you a better understanding and maybe some things I missed that will help your listeners say, man, something's not right. And when you think it's not right, please call. Please be brave enough to stand up for those victims that can't stand up for themselves.
Awesome. Well, thank you, Lieutenant Snuggs. I appreciate you taking the time today and for all the work that you do here in Colorado Springs. So thanks for being here with me.
Thank you.
If you're interested in listening to additional episodes of Beyond the Dais, be sure to look for us on Podbean or wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.